We concluded the last installation of the tale of how Rav Baruch became a chassid of the Baal Shem Tov with Rav Baruch concluding his visit in the town of Yanovich and then deciding to go on to Dobromzil, meeting his old friends and acquaintances who he had known during his 4 years of wandering and whom he had wanted to learn from now as a preparation to his wedding, which would soon take place with his Bashert Rivka, the daughter of Rabbi Avrom de Gertener, and so he was making this trek before he got married. And as we left Rav Baruch, he was on his way to this town of Dobromzil. It was just before Pesach, and the sun had melted the snow, turning the road into a veritable bog. Baruch soon became tired as he trudged thoughtfully along in the mud. He reached a small wood and spied a fallen tree by the side of the path and sat down to rest. He had not been sitting very long when he heard the sound of a horse and cart approaching. The driver was a Christian peasant who hailed Baruch and invited him to step into his cart for a lift. He said there was a Jew living in the village of Yutina, not very far along the road, and Baruch would be able to spend the night there. The peasant said he was going as far as Zafkina, but could drop Baruch at the crossroads from which it was but a short distance to Yutina. Baruch asked the peasant how much he would charge him for the lift, to which the peasant replied, "I never charge for such trifles. There's a rabbi living near me who says we should all help each other, irrespective of any difference in our religions. He is a great man, and everyone respects him. We do what he tells us. That is why I won't charge you now." "But I never accept any service for nothing," said Baruch. "You must take some payment from me, otherwise I cannot come in your cart." The peasant argued no more, and Baruch got into the cart and was put down at the crossroads as agreed. Baruch paid him off and felt better. As Baruch slowly continued on his way in the direction that the peasant had indicated, a young man came running toward him and greeted him, saying, "Would you please come to our house? My father-in-law has asked me to intercept all who are passing along this way, to warn them that they cannot proceed beyond our house, which also is an inn, as the entire area is flooded. The bridge has been carried away by the flood, and unfortunately several peasants with their horses and loaded wagons who were on the bridge at the time were all lost. You see, you cannot do anything but take refuge with us, and I assure you, you are very welcome." Baruch was happy to accept the invitation, particularly as he saw at once that his companion was a learned young man. They immediately found themselves in harmony with each other and were busy discussing various Torah topics. Baruch learned that the young man's name was Nosson Shloime, that he was the son-in-law of the innkeeper, whose name was Nachman Yisrael, a man of about 50. Nosson Shloime also told Baruch how his father-in-law came to establish the settlement there. Baruch was very interested. Nachman Yisrael had spent his youth studying at the most famous yeshivas of the time and earned the praise of all his teachers. He married the daughter of a well-to-do man in Shlobin, and their livelihood was provided for him for 20 years so that the young man was free to continue with his Torah studies. Nachman Yisrael became acquainted with a wandering mystic named Rabbi Zviel Yankov. One day, they both disappeared together, without saying where they were going to. Neither did they disclose the destination or purpose of their trip on their return. Later, it transpired that Rabbi Zriel Yankov was a disciple, a Talmud of the Holy Baal Shem Tov, and it was to him that he took his friend Nachman Yisrael. Possibly, this was the first time that Baruch had heard the name the Baal Shem Tov, and that he was teaching Jews a new way of life with the help of his Talmidim. of his disciples. These were the mystics who wandered through towns and villages, each with his particular mission. As they now had reached the inn, Nelson Shlomo promised to continue his story later. Baruch found a number of visitors at the inn, all apparently stranded like himself. They were all Torah scholars and all made welcome by their host, Nachman Yisroel. They had a regular shiur each evening, and as the visitors proved to be Talmidei Chachomim, they were given the honor of conducting the shiur. Baruch was also invited to give a Talmudic discourse, and a lively discussion followed his expert interpretation of the Talmudical passage that he chose to explain. The people were floodbound for 3 days, and during this time, Baruch became very friendly with the two sons-in-law of Nachman Yisroel, who both lived with their father-in-law at the inn. They told him that their father-in-law had rented the inn and the mill on the advice of the holy Baal Shem Tov, whom he had visited together with Rabbi Azriel Yankiv. Nachman Yisroel had also persuaded some more young men to come along with him. To these he rented the fishing pool, the pond, and altogether they managed to establish this new settlement on the estate of a nobleman. They built a Beis HaMedrash and comprised a small but happy Jewish community of several families. The venture proved a great success, and they all attributed this success to the wonderful powers of the Baal Shem Tov. Baruch got on so well with the two sons-in-law that they begged of him to stay longer. But Baruch, being anxious to get to the Brumzel as soon as possible, asked to be excused because he had to go on his way. As Baruch walked along the road to the Brumzel, looking for the driest spots he could find, his mind went back to his few days at the inn. Everything seemed more vivid in retrospect, and he pondered on all he had seen and heard while he was there. On the new Derech Hashem, the new way of spiritual life adopted by the innkeeper and his sons-in-law, and the difference in their manner of prayer. He could not have known at that time that he had been in contact with one of the first groups of the Baal Shem Tov's followers, the first Hasidim in these parts. Later in the Brumzel, Baruch was to hear more about this great personality. As soon as Baruch reached the town of the Brumzel, he made his way immediately to the smithy of his old friend Elazar Reuven, with whom he always used to spend Pesach. Shalom Aleichem, Baruch called out cheerily to Elazar Reuven, who was standing in his leather apron at the anvil. Turning around and seeing Baruch, Elazar Reuven gave a shout of delight. Throwing off his apron and throwing down his hammer, he quickly washed his hands and came forward to Baruch, and he said to him, "It's so good to see you, my friend. I have so much to tell you since last year. Let us go outside and sit down on the bench." Saying which, he grasped Baruch's arms and led him outside. They sat down, and Elazar Reuven the smith continued, "Before I tell you about my family, I'd like to tell you about Avrom Binyomin and how he became a rich man. As you know, he was such a pauper, hardly able to earn the money to support his many dependents. His parents and his parents-in-law lived with him, in addition to his own fairly large family. And as you'll recall, he had 7 children. You remember he earned his living by sorting wool by hand, which was a slow business, bringing in but little monetary reward. Despite his poverty, Avram Binyamin constantly made sacrifices for his entire family. He made the sacrifice of sending his eldest son, Shloimke, to a yeshiva to study, when he could so well have done with letting him work and help to support the family. Shloimke did so well at the yeshiva that when he came home, he brought many diplomas and smichas from his rabbis testifying to the excellent progress he had made and the satisfaction of his teachers. But that was not all. Shlimke had brought something else home with him. It was a machine, or rather, it was eventually a machine. This is how it came about. The yeshiva where Shlimke learned was in a big town. And one day, while walking, Shlimke saw a machine in which wool was sorted and brushed. It was a splendid thing, but Shlimke knew that neither he nor his father could find the money to buy this magnificent machine. He studied it well, made a drawing of it, and learned all he could about it, determined that he must provide his parents with just such a machine so that they need no longer waste so much time working by hand. As soon as he got home and received the congratulations of the family on his success in his studies, he told them excitedly about his discovery. The family could hardly believe it possible that, according to Shlimke, they would soon be able to work less and earn more. It seemed positively incredible. With the help of a joiner and a tinsmith, Shlimke worked on his idea for 3 weeks, and to their delight, the machine was completed successfully. Shlimke's parents quickly learned to use the machine and found that they could accomplish in a day what previously took them at least 1 month to do by hand. It really seemed too good to be true. As they got through so much work so quickly, peasants from all around heard about it and brought their raw wool to Avram Ben Yamin to be carded by the wonderful machine. Avram Binyamin soon found he was becoming a wealthy man. The first thing he did with his money was to get his two orphaned nieces married and settled. His own son Shlimke he married off to another orphan, the granddaughter of the Rav of the Brumjol. He also paid for a new roof for the shul. Avram Binyamin gave a goodly sum also to other tzedakas, for he knew so well what it meant to be in need. Turning to his own family affairs, the smith went on with a twinkle in his eye. I must say that my third son-in-law is going to secure for me a share of the Sheret HaBe'er, for through my other two sons-in-law, I am assured of my share of the Leviosan. The third son-in-law was named Yitzchok Shaul. Yitzchok Shaul was a fine young man, and the smith was indeed very pleased with the husband of his youngest daughter, not only because of his education, but on account of the goodness of his heart. In addition, the smith felt greatly gratified that in spite of all his rabbinical diplomas, Yitzchok Shaul had announced that he wanted to follow his father-in-law's calling, and became a smith just like his father-in-law. The father-in-law gladly taught Yitzchok Shaul the trade, and Yitzchok Shaul took to it so readily that in a very short time he was able to procure for him a smithy in a village some miles away where he and his wife were soon to settle down. At the moment, Yitzchok Shaul was away at the house of the Duke, whose carriage was brought to us for repair. And what a carriage! You ought to see it when the Duke goes riding in it, harnessed to 6 horses. It was quite a big repair job we had to do. And Yitzchok Shaul has just taken it back after we spent 3 days getting it in order again. The Duke is so proud of this carriage, which he brought from abroad. Suddenly, a piercing scream came from the smithy, and both Eliezer Reuven and Baruch rushed inside to see what was the matter. They found a terrified peasant near the anvil, with smoke from his smoldering clothes enveloping him all around. They quickly threw a rug around him, putting out the flames, applied something to relieve his burns, and finally calmed the poor frightened man. As they were thus occupied, a tall, handsome young man walked in, looked looking surprised at the scene that had just played out before his eyes. He placed a bag in front of the smith, saying, "Here is the money for the repair of the Duke's carriage. What has happened here?" "Let me introduce you to my dear friend Baruch," said the smith, proudly presenting his youngest son-in-law to his friend. The two young men looked at each other approvingly as they shook hands. "This poor peasant was set on fire by a spark," explained the smith in answer to his previous question. "In that case," quickly put in Yitzchok Shaul, "the Mishnah tells us that if a spark shoots forth from under the hammer and causes damage, we are liable." Yitzchok Shaul then proceeded to expound at length the view and legal decision of the Rambam on this point of law. Baruch saw that Yitzchok Shaul was a learned young man as well as a fine character and handsome, and altogether he felt attracted to him and interested to learn all about his past history. Baruch discovered that he had for the first time come in direct contact with one who calls himself a chosid, a follower of the Baal Shem Tov, for so Yitzchok Shaul introduced himself to Baruch. He told him that he came from Harki, where his father, Rav Nissen, was a Malamed. But he was unlike other Malamdim, in that his pupils were young men who were already advanced students, showing an especial aptitude for learning. Rav Nissen himself was a pupil of the Maggid of Harki, Rav Azriel Yosef, who was an ardent follower and disciple of the Baal Shem Tov. Rav Azriel had formed a group of chosen young men to whom he expounded the new teachings of the Baal Shem Tov, and whom he trained in that spirit. Rabbi Nissen became one of the leaders of this group, and during the various absences of Rabbi Azriel Yosef, Rabbi Nissen took over the role of the head in his place. So it was that Yitzchok Shaul was brought up in this Hasidic atmosphere and knew so much about the great founder of Hasidism, the Baal Shem Tov. Baruch was fascinated as Yitzchok Shaul told him more and more about this new way of life. He saw that in Yitzchok Shaul he had a living example of the type of Jew the Baal Shem Tov was striving to produce, a true Torah-loving Jew with a love for his fellow beings. Baruch had also met the other two sons-in-law of Eliezer Reuven, the older one, Rabbi Zalman Meir, and the younger one, Rabbi Moshe Leib. He was greatly impressed by their extensive learning, but when he studied the three sons-in-law as they sat together in the smith's house during Pesach, he could not help observing the marked differences between the cheerfulness of the chosid Yitzchok Shaul and the earnestness of his brothers-in-law, the Misnagdim. When they discussed the Gemara, they did so very seriously, always seeking to find the din, whereas Yitzchok Shaul always seemed to find room for a saying in the middle of this discussion, bringing a feeling of cheerfulness into it, and his object was always to find the fairest solution to a problem. He often managed to find a practical message even in the most abstract Talmudic discourses. While they were all admirable in their own way, Baruch found that Yitzchok Shaul's method of approach and his derech of avodas Hashem, his way of serving Hashem in general, appealed to him most. In his excursions into the woods and the fields, which he loved so much, Baruch spent his time in serious reflection, pondering on the mystery of life and on the purpose of God's creation, and especially insofar as it affected the greatest of God's creatures, man. Baruch reflected that in providing man with his necessities, Hashem had made some things more easily obtainable than others. The greater the need, the easier the effort. Man's first necessity was ear. This could be had by all without difficulty. It was all around one. The second need for man's existence was water. This too could be found without too much effort. But the third requirement to keep one alive, and which gave most trouble, was that of bread. Because of the sin of Adam and Chava in Gan Eden, verse said, "By the sweat of your brow you shall eat bread." And ever since, man has had to struggle to obtain the necessities of life. But what about man's soul? What about a person's neshama? So far we have spoken of the needs of the body. Baruch felt that his faith and the customs and precepts he had absorbed in his youth, which found expression in his religious observances, requiring almost no effort, were like air to his soul. Torah study he compared to the water for his soul, into which he dived joyfully to its very depths. But what was the ultimate purpose of it all? How could he best serve Hashem and bring good to his children? Baruch, who was so eager to discover the true way of life, realized that it was no easy matter. Baruch took advantage of his friendship with Yitzchak Shaul to discuss with him this problem, the solution of which meant so much to him in helping him choose the path which would serve as his guiding point in life. Yitzchak Shaul told him that his father always told him to follow the advice of the Baal Shem Tov, who explained to his Talmidim the following text: Ezeu chacham haloimed mikol adam, kishenema mikol malamdai hiskalti. He who is wise should learn from everybody. Or who is a wise man? He who learns from everybody. For as the verse says, from all my teachers have I gained wisdom. The Baal Shem Tov used this saying of Pirkei Avos to ask his listeners, now is it really possible that everyone is fit to be a teacher and that we can learn something good from everybody? The Baal Shem Tov answered this question by giving the following illustration. It is written that Ner Hashem Nishmas Odom, that the man's soul is Hashem's light. Now where there is light, there is also a shadow. Light can be compared to the soul, and the shadow to the body. When we find ourselves in the presence of a righteous man, we feel that the influence emanating from him is like a spark of light from his soul, electrifying us with the desire to do good deeds. We are also influenced when coming into contact with a sinful man. But he, on the other hand, brings out the worst in us, giving us bad thoughts and ideas leading to wickedness. In other words, we learn from the righteous man to follow the precept of Asei Tov, to do good, while from the sinful person we take the lesson of Sur Meira, to turn away from evil. So you see, it's quite correct to say that he who learns from everybody is truly wise. There is purpose in all that Hashem has created, so that man may learn the best from everything and everyone. The Baal Shem Tov continued, there is a biblical saying that we have learned something even from the animals, upon which Rabbi Yochanan remarks that even if the Torah had not been given chas v'shalom to the Jew, we could learn cleanliness from a cat and to be industrious from an ant. Baruch felt he could listen without end to all that Yitzchak Shaul was telling him, which impressed him very deeply. But Yitzchak Shaul was called away, and Baruch was left musing over the thoughts and ideas he had just heard, and looking forward to the next talk he would have with his new friend, Yitzchak Shaul. After Baruch, as a lad, had worked for Eliezer Reuven the smithy, he found a spot to which he could retire whenever he felt like being alone with his thoughts. This corner of his was a little hill behind the smithy, hidden by trees and overlooking a small river flowing below. Here Baruch would sit on a fallen tree, isolated from the world, surrounded by the beauty of nature, and dream his dreams and think of the higher worlds and spheres. During his subsequent visit to the smithy, whenever he felt the need for solitude, he would come to his favorite retreat. Now, after his talk with Yitzchok Shaul, he again made his way to the hilltop, for he felt that there was much to think about. He admired Yitzchok Shaul so much, not only for his Hasidism, but because, though only 4 years older than Baruch, he already was mature in his thoughts and lived according to his convictions. Whereas he, Baruch, was still searching for the way of life in Avodas Hashem, the derech where he would follow, which would satisfy his hungry soul. Baruch remembered how Yitzchok Shaul helped his father-in-law with the Erev Pesach preparations, as well as with his work in the smithy, both working so harmoniously together with an occasional quotation from the Torah by the son-in-law, or with a joke or a laugh thrown in by either. Baruch turned his thoughts to the other two sons-in-law, who had come to spend Pesach at the home of their father-in-law. He had asked to be told their history, feeling it would give him an insight into their personal characters, and perhaps shed some light on their rabbis and teachers and the schools of thought they represented. The eldest son-in-law, who was now a Rosh Yeshiva in Bashenkovich, had studied at the yeshiva of the other side, that's called the smaller side of Vitebsk, first under Rabbi Yisrael of Vilkomer, and later under the direction of Rabbi Paltiel. The second son-in-law, who was at present a Rosh Yeshiva in Dubrovna, had studied at a yeshiva also in Vitebsk, known as Nochum Tevel's Yeshiva, or Nochum Dvedes Yeshiva. And the more he learned about their background, the more Baruch was able to contrast their derech in Avodas Hashem, their path of life, as compared to the sterling qualities of his new friend, the Talmud of the Baal Shem Tov, Yitzchok Shaul, as shall be told more about him, Yitzchok Shaul, in the coming installment.